to Holy Crap, the Vlogcast. Vlogcast that comes from a skeptical point of view to answer some of the questions of why. This vlogcast started as a combination of the Streisand effect and spite when some people on Facebook told me that they didn't like that I was correcting them for posts that they were posting up that had fuck all to do with reality, and we just want to post stuff because it's fun for us. It doesn't have to make sense or anything like that. It's just the way that we do things. It's not the way that we want you to play with Facebook, because we're doing it the way that we want, and that's the way to do it. Part of the reason of also doing this is to go ahead and follow up on the old adage that sometimes the journey is more important than the destination. I am not a Shujin Triple all over the place. I was born into a Roman Catholic family in Brooklyn, New York, raised on Long Island. I now live outside of Buffalo, New York, and am an unabashed atheist. Joining me on tonight's show is Dallin.
Good evening, folks. I am known online as Dallin. Born and raised in a Lutheran household, baptized shortly after I was born. However, religion was not an overly important thing in my family's life. It was more a community thing to do. And the one thing that I'm thankful for my parents telling me is to always keep an open mind, always look at the world, and always question. Never, ever stop learning. And I've carried that with me for the entirety of my life. Still in Canada after all these years, but always with a watchful eye down south of the border to see everything that's going on. And what prompted me to move from, I guess you could say, lapsed religious to agnostic to skeptic / atheist is looking at the power and influence of religious fundamentalism, not only here in North America, but also worldwide. And I finally said enough was enough, and it's time to start putting a stop to this. And that's why I'm here now.
Also joining us tonight is Joe.
Evening, folks. Joseph here. Born in Chicago, Illinois, as a Roman Catholic, raised in a Irish family, spent 8 years in the military, now living in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, as an atheist. If anybody tells you there are no atheists in foxholes, I am absolute proof that that is a lie.
Now, you might notice that we have a couple of people who are missing from the usual lineup. Witchy has decided that she does not want to pull a Unrenowned Tech and fall asleep on us. Unrenowned Tech has decided that he would be better served with going out to Sonic and getting some kind of a watermelon cold frozen drink thing of some kind.
He had a craving, and as somebody who used to live within driving distance of a White Castle, I cannot judge him for it.
Fair enough. So to both of you guys, thank you very much. We will catch up with you guys next week, which should prove to be a bit of a doozy, and I'll explain about that one in a little bit. This is August 10th, 2014, and we're going to be talking about the difference between skepticism and cynicism and why you really shouldn't cross the streams. And there is a thing about that, and we're going to explore that quite a bit. Now, before we get started, of course, some of you might notice, who have been watching the show before, might notice that my audio is quite a bit different than what it normally would be. I've decided that this week, instead of using the usual microphone system, which is what I use while I'm DJing and such, which plugs in through my my regular music port, audio port, microphone port, I decided this week I was going to be using the microphone on my webcam. Obviously, it's a lot more clear than what it normally would be, although it sounds like it's a webcam microphone. There's not much I can do about that. So yes, it's not going to be crackly. I am still trying to figure out all of why the stupid thing crackles when I'm using it normally.
Question.
But doesn't do it while I'm DJing, so it's a big old pain in the butt. Yeah.
How long have you had it?
Well, the doc said that it should clear up in about 3 more weeks, so long as I keep putting the stuff on it. It shouldn't be that bad after that. Why?
The microphone, you fool.
This is the same microphone that I've been using since... Oh, jeez, what was it? It was 2010 that we got all the guys from TFC to go to Anthrocon, wasn't it?
Yep.
I believe so.
Mm-hmm.
You've had it longer than I've had the studio mic that I generally use. I am also now using my webcam mic for many things. I do have a studio-grade microphone, but it has been acting up lately, and I have found that it is just old age. Like my Nokia. My Nokia survived 3 deployments. It survived being ran over and being dropped from an aircraft, but it could not survive old age. And so it finally went to pasture. Technology doesn't last forever, especially if you use it a lot.
But the fact that the mic is crackling on one medium but not another, that tells me that it is something with the software. So.
And that's pretty much what I'm looking at.
I wasn't aware of that.
Yes. See, while I do DJing in through Second Life, my system is using a different audio driver system in order to do the real-time encoding and such. And
wait, you talked during that?
Oh, yes. Oh,
I wasn't paying attention.
Uh-huh. Anyway, working with that setup, I don't have any kind of audio issues. While doing this, apparently there is. So we'll try to figure it out. I've still got a little bit more time for the summer to try and figure some of this techie stuff out, but you know, we'll work on that. So normally at this point of the show, I would go ahead and I would tell you guys about something that may have been uplifting or caught my attention. And I really debated on how to tell you guys about this one, and I'm going to make it really quick because we're already, you know, part of the way into the show. I had to deal with somebody this week that really made me feel like I am not nearly as good a person as I thought that I was. It's not for the reason that you thought. I had to deal with someone complaining that I forget things. And they have had conversations with me and discussed stuff that was somewhat important. And it just didn't take. I just completely blanked out on it, don't remember it. And the sad part of it is, it's true. It happens. It still happens. And I told this person, I have been dealing with short-term memory problems for the last 9 years. Ever since we lost my wife, I have had serious, serious problems with memory retention. I admit it. I own up to it. And I work my best way through to, you know, try to not have it affect my life. It still does, and I know that it does, because I see it happen every once in a while. And I was told, I lost my significant other, someone they were married to, and I'm intentionally keeping the genders out of the equation because I don't want to have anybody try to come up with question marks as to who it might be. They lost their significant other in a similar fashion to cancer, as I recall, but they bounced back and they know exactly how I feel, how it is for me, except they don't have a child to deal with. So I should be okay. After 9 years, you have responsibility, Shu, obviously using my real name because they don't know about this. You've got responsibilities. You should have everything working right for yourself at this point. You need to make sure that that's working for you. I was able to bounce back. You should be taking care of yourself, you and your daughter. And I fired back. Normally, I would not retaliate, but I fired back. I will be damned if I will let somebody tell me that my grief and my hurt and my damage in my own body and brain and mind and spirit is going to be downplayed by anybody. I don't care who you are. If you are not my doctor, and if you are not my psychologist or psychiatrist or someone with whom I invest time and energy to discuss what's really going on inside of my brain, you have got fuck all to go ahead and tell me. You've got one set of balls to go ahead and tell me that what I'm feeling, what I'm experiencing, I should get through, I should have been already taken care of. Just because you can't see the scars doesn't mean that they're not there. Just because you don't know how the bone set doesn't mean that I should be running an Iron Man because you think that I should. Bottom line, where do you have the balls to tell anyone that what they feel, what they've gone through, what trauma they've experienced should be done? You don't. We've discussed on the show before about death, dying, grieving. Don't ever, ever think that just because you can't see the scars, that they're not there. If someone tells you that they still have problems mentally because of whatever it might be, don't downplay that. Never, ever downplay it. Don't be treating them with kid gloves. Don't be telling them that they're not worthwhile. Don't placate them and make them feel like, that's nice, honey, it's okay, just run along now either. When we hurt, we hurt. And it gets done when it gets done. And you don't get to set that timetable. Don't be looked on as being heartless, cruel, and unsympathetic. Don't give us your pity. Give us your understanding. If we say why we've got a problem, it's probably because we're owning up to it. We're not making an excuse. We're saying, I understand why. I know it. I'm working with it. If I've made the mistake, I'm sorry. But work with me. Don't denigrate me.
Yeah, no, the Salem.
There are far too many, Joe in particular, there are far too many of your brothers and sisters in arms who've come back from way too many places, and you are one of them. You know exactly what I'm talking about. You know exactly what it feels like.
Yeah, it's a very, very open wound for me right now for
many reasons.
And you know what? I haven't really come out and put it out there, but you know what? Enough people have actually supported me. A couple weeks ago, those of you who watch the show often might have noticed I wasn't here, or if I was here, I was not all here. A few weeks ago, last month, my mother had experienced a seizure and collapsed while she was home alone. And she passed away that day. They did actually revive her, but there was no brain activity outside of seizures afterward. And she was on life support in a way that there was nothing. The decision was made after 2 weeks of sitting in the hospital, and it was going to be a matter of we can draw this out over the next 3 months and lose her anyway, or we can just do it and let her stop suffering. So I haven't lost a spouse. I don't know that kind of pain, but I have lost the most important person in my life. And yeah.
And it hurts. And it sucks because there are going to be people who are not going to understand and are going to treat it poorly and already have.
I really didn't want to blow up about this, but a lot of people have been talking to me following it, and they expect me to somehow have found religion as a result. I even had one of my aunts, who is a born-again Christian, not just a Christian, a born-again Christian, come out and look at me and my siblings as my mother is laying there on her deathbed and tell us that maybe God didn't do this to her to teach her a lesson. Maybe he did it to teach all of you a lesson. That's not something you want to say to somebody in that situation, regardless of their persuasion. But to say that to your own flesh and blood, about your own flesh and blood, a woman who has never harmed a single person in this world, the sweetest, most caring person I've ever known, and to say that somehow there is some justified plan that she should die the way she did. Yeah. You're barking up the wrong tree. And that's as nicely as I can put it.
I lost my dad 6 years ago now, and it was a church funeral because, again, going back to the community thing, and I think that was the last time I set foot in that church. And one of the things they did afterwards was almost like a receiving line where the family members would stand behind this table and, you know, would accept handshakes. And I was numb. My dad and I were not the closest, but I loved him dearly, and I did fall apart during the proceedings. But I will never forget there was one guy who shook my hand, and he actually clasped my hand in both of his. And he had that look. The look, I really don't know if it was born-again look, or, but just that sort of airy, that glassy-eyed look that we hear a lot about from religious people. And it actually took me a full 3 minutes to recognize who this guy was, because what was coming out of his mouth did not match this same person whom I'd grown up with and had known as a good friend for over 20 years. I didn't recognize him. And I actually had to sit down. I looked at my mom a couple days later and I said, was that who I thought it was? And she went, yeah. And then she told me a few things, like he'd gone through a lot and everything, but just, wow. And like he wanted to talk, he wanted to open up, you know, like let's have a fellowship type thing. It's like, no, you know, I'm done with all that stuff. It's amazing what sort of finding God will do to people. I'm thankful that my friend wasn't quite as visceral as your aunt, Joey, but still, I can just see how damaging it can be.
And that ties into how this is really going to end up playing out. The topic that we're going to go with tonight is skepticism and cynicism, and what they are, why crossing them back and forth between each other is not a great thing, and we're going to kind of go into a little bit of that. A lot of this is going to be really language minutiae. So, again, as I've said on many an occasion, we are not theologians, we are not philosophers, we are not very, very well schooled in a lot of stuff. We are lay people who are talking through stuff as we've understood it through our years so far.
I reject one of your statements. We are, in fact, philosophers. That is, in fact, what we are doing here right now.
Yeah.
We are not professional philosophers. Or, as Mel Brooks has said,
bullshit artists.
Exactly. Yeah. Right. Stand-up philosophers. That's us.
Exactly. So if we have something technically wrong, please forgive me. It's not because we're trying to piss anybody off or mislead. It's because we are simply ignorant on a topic in a particular situation. And we use the term ignorant in its absolute literal sense, meaning we just don't know. So,
that's not actually what ignorant means. It's unknown. We are uneducated in that particular subject. Ignorant is to know of the subject and ignore it.
Okay.
Case in point, folks.
Case in point. Exactly right. Thank you so much. You know,
the other thing too is that we are open to be educated by a peer.
Yes.
So if there's something that if we futz up on it. We've got the chat thing. We've all got our own emails. Call us on it. We encourage it because we want to learn.
We're all scientific in mindset, and peer review is the absolute end-all be-all of scientific process.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. So if you'd like to chime in, we got a couple of ways you can do it. If you'd like to send me an email, you can send it to shujintribble, all one word, @gmail.com. If you would like to send a tweet or hit me on Facebook, you can also hit me under the name Shujin Tribble. However, we also do have the Google Voice line open. If you'd like to send a text message, you can do it that way also. Or you can send a voicemail. I can't get it on the line, unfortunately. We can't have you on live with us, but we'll see if there's a way of doing that later. The phone number for us is 859-HCTV. 554. There's actually a story behind it all. So it comes out to, make sure I get this right, 859-4288-554. Yes, I've actually got this thing written down for myself over on the side. Yes, I actually wrote it down because, I'll be arsed if I can actually remember it half the time. So,
or there's always.
There's always what?
It's over here.
I don't have a question.
The Q&A.
Yet.
The Q&A.
Well, I didn't get there yet.
Oh. What's wrong with you?
Let him finish the script, dude.
Wow, dude, really? You want me to go through the list of everything? Come on.
Hey. As long as I've contributed to the list, I'm allowed to...
Actually, the funny part of it is that's my password list, so we'll talk about that later.
Wow.
No, there is not nearly enough resolution to make out any of it, so don't even worry about it. I'm not stupid.
Rewind the video.
That's not going
to
work.
I'm actually proud to say that as far as that particular list goes, the one that is sort of the elephant in the room, I'm glad to say I believe I still hold the number one spot on that list of things we can never repeat
on
any show we ever do.
This is true.
Play by CSI rules, enhance.
Yeah, you try that. We'll see how that works out for you. Anyway, plus, as Joe mentioned, yes, if you're here live with us, you can go ahead and use the question and answer system. It's somewhere on the video. I don't know where, but work it from there. So let's start off with cynicism. I'm not going to pull up Merriam-Webster's dictionary and give you a direct Oxford English version of it all.
I will.
As I've understood it, as a layperson, cynicism is basically poo-pooing life in general just because it's life. And why think anything good could possibly come of anything, because it's all going to kill you in the end anyway. Since Joey's looking up the actual Dallin, how much do you want to change on that?
Well, your kind of definition of cynicism there is almost leading towards nihilism or nihilism, depending on pronunciation preference.
Like, it doesn't really much matter, does it? I mean, come on.
Well, okay, precisely my point. Like, what you're saying, though, is it doesn't matter because we're all going to die anyway. That's a pretty nihilistic approach to it. But, no, cynicism is basically, to me, is... having an opinion, somewhat sarcastic on just about every subject. And it's never constructive, usually snarky, if you'll forgive the term. But, to me it's just not having anything nice to say about anything.
I can go with that.
Yeah.
So, Joe, go ahead.
Well, that's not exactly how the Greeks intended the term, but according to the wonderful folks over at Merriam-Webster, cynicism, to be captious or peevish, if that's not clear enough for you, Having or showing an attitude or temper. But the most direct definition, the belief that people are generally selfish and dishonest, that people are out for their own gain and nothing else, that you can always rely on somebody to screw you over if it's going to benefit them.
Hmm. Interesting.
In other words,
all right,
a general belief that the world is unfair. And guess what, folks? It ain't. It ain't fair at all.
Nope. Nope. And our pains and our scars have proven it many times over. That's exactly the case. But now there's an interesting part about that. Because even though we do have the pain and the scars showing how life is unfair, skepticism is a very, very different animal. And Joe, I'm giving you first crack at it because I'm a dick that way.
Well, there is a little bit that goes hand in hand with that, but skepticism is different in the fact that you're not expecting somebody to be bullshitting you. You're saying, show me. Prove to me. I'm not calling you a fucking liar to your face. I'm asking you to give me some proof, some evidence. If there is no evidence, then I have to assume that you're fucking bullshitting.
Okay, I gotta stop you here. I have to remind you, please don't use the F word. Face is not a word that we're supposed to be using on the air, so just don't use that word.
Right. Don't say it to my visage.
Thank you. And considering Tiny Tribble's going to be taking French this year, yeah, nice. Dal?
Okay, well, following in Joey's footsteps, I decided this time that I was going to hit our good friends at Merriam-Webster.
Nice! I love it. I love it.
I don't have to.
Yeah, you
I
see?
I love when a Google bitch comes together like this.
Share the work, share the pain, right?
Why not?
Okay. I am turning my head so that I can read what I've got here because I have dual screens because that's how I roll. Skepticism.
I miss those days, man.
An attitude of doubting the truth of something, such as a claim or a statement. Now, the full definition is, one, an attitude of doubt or a disposition to incredulity, either in general or toward a particular object. Number two, the doctrine that true knowledge or knowledge in a particular area is uncertain, or the method of suspended judgment, systematic doubt, or criticism characteristic of skeptics. And number three, doubt concerning basic religious principle as immortality, providence, and revelation. So, yeah, that's drawing it down a little bit more, but it's not so much that the a view that the world is unfair. It is that there is no absolute knowledge. There is no absolute truth. And therefore, everything is subject to doubt and must be proven.
Right. That you're not... Okay, to me, going by these... Cynicism to me would seem like you already have your needle not exactly pinned to one side or the other, so much as is leaning far more into the somebody's out to get me one way or another side versus skeptic, where the needle is still right dead smack in the middle, waiting for something to deflect it one way or the other on... You know, is things going to be good, things going to be bad? Is things going to be right, or things going to be wrong? And they're not exactly the same thing, but they definitely fall into overlapping camps on a lot of pieces.
Yeah, the line is definitely there. Especially when you are looking at, and I mean, and we look at it mostly here, the religious debate. Fair and sure. I use the term debate loosely here, but... I could say controversy. I could say war, for that matter. the religious, if it's not pointing in their direction, then they lump it, you know, they look at a skeptic like, oh, you're just a cynic, which, ironically, they're actually being cynical towards the skeptic.
Hmm.
But, like, the simple thing is that if it doesn't point their way, then, you know, it's automatically wrong.
This would be interesting. Joe, what do you... We got the blinky, the blinky, the blinky. What's going on here?
Some will get it, some won't.
Well, the problem is the screen is flashing.
It's flickering. It's
there we go.
It was there for a second.
What are you doing, sir?
Hold on.
I hate it when this happens like this.
Is that any better?
It's still winking in and out.
No.
Well, I don't know what to tell you then.
Hmm.
Okay, fine. We'll come back to it a little bit. All right, so skepticism is a necessary step in the scientific process. And I want to touch on something that you just said, Dallin, which was about the religious... Let's go with debate. Argument.
Okay. It's a gentle enough word.
Yeah, exactly so. Because, I mean... Contrary to what Fox News would like everybody to believe, there is not a war going on anywhere, as far as this is concerned, in the Western Hemisphere.
Yeah.
At least not in the way that they've described it.
If there was, things would be a whole lot more interesting for people like me.
Yes. Somehow
we're not blowing shit up over here yet.
Yeah, there's that. Although I would love to be in shape enough where I could like lean, you know, just suddenly lean my whole body back and just look around. Are you not entertained? I would love to be able to pull that off.
And I think we were doing movie quotes last night.
Well, yes. Which is a whole other thing. Maybe we'll talk about that later.
Thank you both for that. Well, I kind of have to blame myself, but you guys egged it on. And now I had to go watch one of my favorite movies as far as quotes go. Oddly enough, The Prophecy.
I'm unfamiliar with that one.
Is that the one that I think it is with...
Christopher Walken playing the angel Gabriel. And
yes.
Viggo Mortensen as Lucifer. Holy hell, did he do a good job.
It's Viggo. What more do you need to say?
Oh, if only I could say it the way he said it. I can't, so I won't. But I won't try. But damn, did he do a good job.
All right. Maybe we'll bring that to a show sometime in the future. Something fun. So anyway, the scientific method, all right, let's back up just a second. Science is not an end-all be-all. Science is a process. And I've described it not entirely accurately, although not entirely dishonestly, as fix it till it breaks.
And then start fixing it again.
Yeah, exactly. And I will wholly admit that I'm effectively stealing a line from Red Green. And Dal, you know full well of Red Green, I would assume.
Yes.
Being that he is, of course, one of your 3M shills up there in Canada. So yeah, there's a thing about GM shills and whatnot, but we'll talk about that later. Anyway, the scientific system, the scientific process method, is to try to figure out why does something work the way that it does, and then try to isolate it, and then try to figure out, am I right? With as few extra pieces into the mix as possible. And because of that, we have gone from expecting that Odin and Thor are throwing thunderbolts all over the place to clouds are moving across each other at static electricity because water is a polarized molecule anyway. Holy shit, what an amazing thing. And I like to use that because it's something that is identifiable. It's something that is easily graspable. Not the least of which because we've had the various Thor movies and the Avengers, which, by the way, all you guys over there at Marvel, if the ending to the Guardians of the Galaxy is any indication of a future project, so help me, I will be so done with you guys. It's not even funny. Don't even play with my affections like that.
See, now I'm thinking of going to catch a matinee tomorrow.
Yeah, we'll have to see that. Okay, what did you get? Yes! There you go. There it is. Ask a question. State a hypothesis. Don't do that. Conduct an experiment. Analyze the results. Make a conclusion. Start all over again.
Is it still showing because my screen is all fucked?
Yeah, I see it.
Yep, you're fine.
But yeah, it's not a one-step pony. It's a multiple step, and then if things don't turn out the way you want them, you don't just get to say, oh, well, it's just, you know, beyond our knowing. It's, you know, it's got to be God's work. There's an answer, people.
Yeah, exactly so. And the thing about it is that skepticism comes into play with this from the standpoint of, actually, could you bring that back up again?
Sure, give me one moment.
Yeah, because where skepticism falls into place in all of this is in between several of these steps. And it's a good piece. All right, here we go. Maybe not. There it is. Okay, so asking a question is a simple enough thing to do. We ask questions about everything. Why did the gas mileage on my car suddenly drop to, you know, basically nil? Okay. State a hypothesis. Well, maybe the gas tank is falling out. That would stop it. All right. Well, conduct an experiment. Get out of the car and take a look. Is the gas tank still there? Gas tank's still there. So I've analyzed results. Conclusion is it ate the gas tank. Okay. Let's start again. Skepticism comes into place of conduct an experiment and analyze the results. Analyzing the results is where skepticism lives and thrives, because you have to look at stuff and go, okay, why is something the way that it is? Is this right? Does this fall into place? Is my first question and idea as to why something is it right? How do you figure out if it's right? You look over the stuff that you've got and really slice and dice it and try and figure it out. And skepticism says, I'm not going to just say that you're right until we've got all the information in. And that's something that really screws people's minds over, because they think sometimes that science is step one, step two, and step five. And it's not. It absolutely is not. You need all of these steps in order to make sure that you come to the correct piece of what reality is.
Now, there is a step missing from this.
Sure.
Between step four and five, there should be another step. Can the results be repeated? Can it be peer-reviewed? Can your peers do the same experiment, get the same results, and come to the same conclusion?
Or completely take it apart.
Exactly.
Yeah, and that's right. It's something that is absolutely, absolutely wholly important. I'm thinking of Dallin, I'm putting it on you on this one for a second, because I'm pretty sure that you would know it. One of the biggest, baddest machines on the planet said that what we knew about physics was wrong. The baseline information about the ultimate speed of the universe is wrong. And they said, we've checked it out left, right, and center. We think that we've got this dead to rights, but this isn't right with everything else we know. Who else wants to take a crack at it and figure out what it was that we screwed up? Oh, we didn't plug everything in correctly. You remember what it was?
Oh, I'm trying to remember this now. I believe it was a collider, wasn't it?
Yes, it was. It was the collider.
the one that guys like me always assume are going to cause a black hole that's going to swallow up the planet in a blink of an eye. We won't know what's going on.
Well,
I'm thinking the one you're talking about. I don't know if it's the Large Hadron Collider or not.
Yes, it was.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, CERN.
Yep.
Just because I know there was another collider out there that I think it's actually in North America, and there was something about it not working right or something, but I could be wrong.
That would probably be Fermilab over there in Chicagoland, if I remember correctly. Yes, Joe?
Well, I'm looking that up now, seeing which ones are out there. I do know there is one in the U.S. It's not quite as big.
No, there's a couple of them, as a matter of fact. There's one in Brookhaven National Labs on Long Island. My guys. Home of the National Weather Service. Which, by the way, you guys over there at National Weather Service, if you have to be watching, I got the chance to visit with you guys back in the 90s, early 90s, and nothing was more entertaining than watching a big, huge line of heavy-duty thunderstorms go through, and the guys are looking at the Doppler weather radar, and one of the guys who's an Aussie is looking over the hood, and he's just like, come on, damage! And he looks over at us, and he's just like, what, it gets boring over here. Come on, I just want something entertaining.
The particle accelerators, or Large Hadron Colliders, as we know them, I believe this is a good list. Yes. They include the one at CERN, which is the largest.
Yep, the Large Hadron Collider.
480, the one that they have right now. 480 GeV. I'm not sure what GeV means.
I do. It's the geek of the group.
It's a voltage, but I don't know the prefix.
Giga electron volts.
Okay.
One for the geek.
We have, let's see. Those currently in use, we have one in Dubno, Russia, Saclay, France, Berkeley, Birmingham, Brookhaven.
My guys.
And I know there's one somewhere over in, like, okay, Los Alamos, Switzerland, Vancouver has one, Triumph.
Hmm.
There's a lot more.
Right. That's right. Fermilab got shut down. I forgot about that.
Yeah.
They closed that some. And if I remember right, that is Chicago.
I want to say there's one in, like, the Ohio area.
They're
somewhere in the Midwest. Somewhere in the Midwest.
Well, we'll come back to that.
There it is. Bates Linear Accelerator. No, that's in Maryland. Damn it, I know there's one out there someplace.
See, this is what happens, man. You go down the bunny hole and you never know how far it's going to go down. It's one of the great things about these shows. Anyway, all right, so while he's still looking that up, the point of the point that I'd been trying to make as far as to skepticism was concerned was the guys at the Large Hadron Collider were getting information that was saying that neutrinos were traveling faster than the speed of light.
Yeah.
Which everything that we have discerned about the universe to date says, no can do. That's not supposed to be possible.
Universal speed limit.
Mm-hmm.
186,000 miles per second, not just a good idea, it is the law. So the guys at the LHC basically went over everything. They went over everything. The gravitational attraction of the moon to the Earth. The gravitational attraction of the various different plates of the Earth. What was going on? What planes were flying overhead? Was the moon in the seventh house of Betelgeuse? I don't care. Whatever that was. Everything that they could have possibly had affecting, they checked as far as they knew. And when all was said and done, they went and they checked everything that they could, and they couldn't figure out anything else that was wrong. So they just said, you know what? We think that we've got this. But it doesn't match everything else that we've known, every other test that we've ever done. Could somebody else look it over and try to come up with their own answer too, and let us know how we screwed up, because we're pretty sure that we did. Which is the hallmark of science, is the hallmark of skepticism. I got an answer that I can't verify, I can't say that it's wrong, because everything else says that it's right. But I still don't think that I'm right.
Uh-huh. I mean, hopefully you guys didn't have to
that's
watch
beautiful.
Knows.
No, it's fine. It's fine. But I'm trying to figure out where you know, since you took a couple seconds away, Joe, how about this one? The idea of we've checked everything, and everything we says that we've got the right answer, but yet we still don't think that we're right. Could somebody else check and find out what did we miss?
Exactly.
How many times can people say, I'm right, I'm right, I'm right, I'm right, I'm right, I don't care what you have to say, I'm right. And how many times will people do that and it turns out that they actually are right?
If you want a really great example, look up Albert Einstein's attempts to prove his theory of relativity.
Mm-hmm.
The number of people all over the world, it took a solar eclipse and them measuring how far light bent going around the sun,
mm-hmm,
to actually prove his theory. And it's, well, to give validity to his theory. It's not a proven because it is, in fact, a theory. It is not what we understand as a law. Well, theories and laws they're not the same thing, and they are, even a law isn't like an end-all be-all. It is,
if I may?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. The way that I've heard it explained, and I love this one, scientific laws are what we see, what we observe, what we measure consistently at this time, up to this point, whereas a scientific theory is the best approximation to reality using all of these laws as we have observed to date.
Yes.
Meaning it's all up to reinterpretation later if something new comes along.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, according to the Lexington, a phenomenon of nature that has been proven to invariably occur whenever certain conditions exist or are met. Therefore, it is something that we know happens every time a certain situation happens. However, that is only what we know to this point. That is not to say there is no way that, you know, these sets of conditions can't have a different outcome.
Right. Again, it's what we have observed consistently to date. And it's always up to reinterpretation. Dal, I'm pretty sure that you've got some other piece that you want to throw into that too.
No, you pretty much spelled it all out for me.
You're not helping actually, here.
I was actually going to use something that I learned in an astronomy class back in university about seeing something very similar to the neutrino effect. I was taking an introductory astronomy course, and one of the phenomenon that they showed us was a quasar. Now, I'm not going to get into what a quasar is. Look it up, okay?
Yeah.
But what they showed was a series of images, and the fact that you can actually get an image of these things from that far out, phenomenal in itself. But there seemed to be a piece of, like a part of it that was moving away from a central mass. Now, the speed at which that piece was moving, if calculated correctly, was moving faster than light. And my first thought was, okay, suddenly everything I know is out the window. What did they miss, or what was it? And of course, what they eventually realized was they then brought in the I don't know if you can really call it a theory. I'm going to say the concept of curved space-time light refraction. They eventually did explain it, and it turns out it was a very far away optical illusion. The ejecta was not moving faster than the speed of light, but using things like curved space-time, that's how it appeared to our telescopes. But they were able to keep it back into the law and just say that you're dealing with, like, we're not talking light years, folks. We're talking parsecs, which are longer than light years. This is not the unit that the Millennium Falcon did the Kessel run in, okay?
Parsec has always confused me. We completed in 12 parsecs. That's a unit of distance, not a unit of time. What are you talking about?
And besides, if you're talking parsecs, I think you're actually going outside the galaxy. That's another story entirely. But again, it goes to, we see something, we have observed something that is outside of what we know. It is an unexpected phenomenon. Let's explain it.
Yeah, it's essentially the matter of, you know what, I've done this 1,000 times and it's always been the same, except yeah. This once.
Yeah. When time 1001 comes out, that blows away your theory, or that blows away everything you know, it's time to go back and see, okay, in instance 1001, did I miss something? If I did miss something, okay, corrected, we're back to status quo. If you are positive that you've done everything right, then you send it up for review. If the reviewers say, no, you didn't plug this in, okay, once again, you have recognized your error and you have corrected. In those rare times when time 1001 actually falls into everything, then you've discovered something incredible. And then all the scientists get to work trying to explain it.
Props to Dr. John Simonetti over at the Virginia Tech Physics Department. If you want to know about quasars, look up Virginia Tech Physics, Dr. John Simonetti, frequently asked questions about quasars, and it has a list of everything you could possibly want to know about them.
I'll have to check that out. Okay. I do like my astronomy. I do want to meet Neil deGrasse Tyson one of these days. It's on my bucket list.
I don't blame you. And with any luck, maybe we will get the chance of having him on sometime. I would love that. I don't hold out a lot of hope, but as the expression goes, we have nothing to lose by asking.
Mm-hmm. Setting your goals a little high there, aren't you, Shi?
And why not?
We had a motivational speaker back in school, and he did say something to us once. He said, "Shoot for the moon," and it doesn't matter if you miss because you're still around. You're still amongst the stars.
Yeah, I'm sure that would have been great consolation to the guys in Apollo 13.
Well, they had better aiming than I did.
Yes. That's true.
I think it's good for them, you know. It.
And now all I'm hearing is the CinemaSins version episode of Everything Wrong with the Movie Gravity as annotated by Neil deGrasse Tyson.
Oh, yes.
I haven't seen it. Did he actually do that?
Oh, yes. Yes, he did.
I will have to look that up. Okay. So let's kind of keep this going because we want to get this going. First off, of course, if you're watching with us, thank you very much. If you're watching live, thank you even more. We know that this is not a sexy vlogcast, but, you know, we do find something worthwhile in it. We hope that you do, too.
You take that.
If you've got comments, questions, suggestions, and whatnot, please, the question and answer system is available here at the Google Hangout. You can post up over on the Hangout, over on YouTube. Email me, shootintriple@gmail.com. The voice line, as you see, is available here too, 859-HCTV-554, and we will see what we can do on this one. Now, skepticism with all of this comes into play of, why is something the way that it is? Okay, you can actually show me that on a consistent basis, your explanation works, taking as many variables out of the equation as possible. Okay, good. You've shown me to a reasonable extent that what you're saying, why this happens on a consistent enough basis that I'm willing to accept it. Because it's much more likely that you're right than you're wrong, because you've done due diligence, and what you're saying, why does something happen? Okay, you've got it explained. Good. All right, great. A cynic would look at it all and say something along the lines of, you're just feeding me a line because you want me to invest in your next set of protocols to test something. And there is a crossover in these kinds of streams that could be a good thing, could be a bad thing. And I'm specifically thinking of a physician in the South, in the Southern United States, who has been accused of using his methodologies for personal gain instead of patient care. I don't have the money to fight a potential libel lawsuit, so I'm going to be as cryptic as possible with still giving accurate information. And we're not going to name names. If you have been a follower of The Skeptic's Guide to the Universe, you would have heard about similar situations, perhaps even the one that I'm thinking of. But maybe not. Anyway.
I think, you know, we can sum it up in a, you know, going back to Neil deGrasse Tyson again. Again, we're looking at something that relates to Einstein. When Einstein started his whole theory of relativity, he was looking at Newton's work. And Newton, who, you know, explained gravity for us, actually was working on, you know, some more in-depth work on gravity and couldn't figure it out. And so pretty much threw up his hands and said, oh, well, must be God. Because, you know, even Isaac Newton was religious, albeit not crazy on it. But Tyson said it best. Intelligent design is a philosophy of ignorance. It is you get to something you don't understand, and then you stop. You say, God did it, and you no longer progress beyond that point. Being a skeptic means we don't accept that. We do not accept stopping progress.
There is an answer to every question. But yeah. there are no unsolvable mysteries given time, technology, and knowledge.
I mean,
and the thing about Newton is, yeah, he stopped, if I remember this correctly, is because he lacked the technical, he lacked the technology and the knowledge, or like the mathematics, to progress any further.
Exactly.
So,
and that's
he hit his limit.
And that's why when Einstein looked at it, he said, no, this can't be right. And we're not going to say he solved it, but he came up with the best conclusion that we could come with. And that is why, you know, Einstein's theories are generally accepted. They're not laws. They're not something that we say, this is the truth. This is our best guess.
You know, here's a kind of a microcosm example of that. Again, cold cases. Turning it around to criminal investigations, cold cases. So in the 1950s, you've had a murder that at the time was unsolvable because your methodologies, your technology, your ability to gather and analyze evidence was too primitive to get anything from it. Now you have the advent of DNA. You have advanced investigative techniques. You have advanced technology to help you get the rest of those clues. They're cracking open these cases, finding out, like applying the new methodology to the old once unsolvable cases and are now solving them. Granted, maybe a little bit too late for justice because, you know, it could be the perpetrator's already dead. But the bottom line is you're taking the age-old, but now you're applying stuff you've learned to it to help extend what you're doing.
Well, I guess the butler really did do it. I had to.
All we needed right there was the yeah from the who, and yeah.
All right, now, give you guys an idea as to why we'd say that given enough time and enough technology that we can pretty much solve everything. And I would tend to agree with that. Perfect example is this. Now, it's a little hard to make out, but... Well, I've got it a little blown out, unfortunately. This is a picture from... I couldn't even tell you when it was. And I know it's incredibly difficult to make out. But it is my wife, her cousin, her niece, her mom, and her sister and aunts. The two aunts who came over from Japan. And it's a photograph. It's captured photons that were suspended in a piece of plastic, along with various chemicals that react to photons, energy of light, packets of light of specific wavelength, and change how they are. Now, in the intervening years, of course, it's become electronic pulses of north and south, of on and off, and eventually inserted into this now ubiquitous device that we don't even think twice about, of all of the technology that's gone into making something like this. This was something that could not even be contemplated 400 years ago by Isaac Newton and company. And yet it is now ubiquitous.
400 years ago. It couldn't be contemplated 40 years ago. Jeez.
True. But at the time, when you were dealing with learning through the various concepts of the universe, you had quill and paper, and you had the notes from centuries gone by. The ancient Greeks, admittedly, had incredible amounts of math that were simply glossed over for millennia, basically.
You show somebody a piece of technology they don't have any experience or understanding of, it's either going to be labeled as witchcraft or religion.
Right, and who was it that said that any sufficiently advanced technology is indistinguishable from magic?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm trying to remember, Dallin. You might know better. Who the hell was it?
I know the quote. I can't cite it at this point.
Arthur C. Clarke.
What he said?
Arthur C. Clarke.
Okay. So for us, as skeptics, we would go on and we would say, okay, that's great tech. That's a great something or other that I can't explain.
Mm-hmm.
What are the intervening steps that get me from the understanding of what I have now to yours? And that's skepticism. Whereas cynicism could very easily just be, okay, wow, great magic. And could conceivably just leave it at that. Or think, you know, it's
perfect. Yeah. Perfect. Magic tricks.
Okay.
Magic tricks are the answer. You see, a magician saw a woman in half. Hmm. The guy sitting to your left says, Ah, what the hell? He's, you know, it's bullshit. He's got, you know, two ladies with one sticking her legs out the end of the box. That is cynicism. The guy to your right says, that's an interesting trick, but it's definitely a trick. I wonder how he did it. That's skepticism.
Okay.
You see the difference?
Trying to understand, trying to figure out, okay, I can see this, I can see that, I can see that, I can see this. What am I missing? Could be considered skepticism because you are still trying to reason your way through from where you are to what's behind the curtain.
Cynicism could be, you know, taken as a jumping to conclusions because you don't understand something, jumping to conclusion because, you know, you just don't believe what just happened, whereas skepticism is, you know, trying to figure out why what just happened. Cynicism is, you know, just a personality trait. Skepticism is a way of thinking. Now, what's the difference between the two? You know,
I can tell you what it is.
Personality traits are good or bad. Take them how you want.
I can tell you what it is. The difference, cynicism is, this is broken because there's nothing left inside of it anymore. Skepticism is, I may need to use the bathroom soon. Oh, right, because I drank all this. Give me a break, man. It's late. Don't give me a hard time.
All cynicism is, you know, a lifelong dedication to sarcasm.
Which in and of itself is not necessarily a bad thing.
No.
It depends as to how you're using it.
Yeah. Or, and again, kind of spinning it around, okay, going off of sort of my own kind of definitions here, or in all my own interpretations, let's be fair about this.
Well, go for it. I mean, that's the whole point of the thing, man.
Yeah. So, religious person X starts up again. You know, the clip of the tropes is reloaded because,
Wow. Well,
no, let's face it. Here's my cynicism. These guys haven't come up with a new argument in a very long time. And so they start again. And Seth Anders from the Thinking Atheist radio podcast, he came up with this one perfectly, the broken record. Once again, the claims come out, the stories come out, the questions come out, the Fred Durst wannabe who can destroy atheism in 30 seconds is basically hitting the same tropes that an amateur like myself could debunk in 35 seconds. So the skeptic is like, okay, pal, let's test what you've just said. Let's find the evidence. Where the cynic says, ah, fuck, you again? Oh, sorry. My bad. Face, you again?
Great.
But no, it is, to me, turning cynical is finally reaching that point where how many times do you have to shout at a brick wall before you realize you're shouting at a brick wall? And when you've hit that point, it's like, why am I even bothering? And then every time somebody says something, you're just like, yeah, whatever.
Yeah. Skepticism and the scientific theory is starting with a question,
yeah,
performing your experiments, and coming to a conclusion.
Yeah.
Whereas, you know, things like intelligent design are starting with your conclusion, yeah, and then questioning how you can come up with an experiment to prove your conclusion.
Yeah. But the other thing, too, about skepticism is never taking anything at face value. It's like somebody makes a claim, and if you yourself do not have the experience to agree with that based on what you know and what you have learned, you automatically become suspect of it. It's never taking anything, quote-unquote, on faith. Yeah, it's beginning to pose the question to say, is what you're saying correct?
Yes. A door does not open because you put a key in and it magically opens the door. A door opens because you put the key in, you turn the key, and a very precise series of events takes place to move whatever is holding that door closed out of the way so that the door can then be opened.
And most of us don't even think about it. Most of us don't understand what actually goes into such a, again, such a ubiquitous and ancient technology.
Yeah.
I mean, the lock and key method has been used for long, long time.
Yeah.
I mean, the trope of the old giant metal key that's like 14 inches long that sticks into the thing and you crank the sucker around and you can finally open up a dungeon door, that technology is ancient.
Yeah.
And we're not using anything very much different from it except in its overall size.
Yeah.
But yet we just – it's a kind of magic because we don't know how it operates.
Well, not necessarily though. The thing is – okay, a kid can see a key go into a lock, turn, and open. And the kid can look at the adult who has opened this door and said, how did that work? Now, the adult may shrug his shoulders, but the thing is, somewhere out there is the answer. It has been documented. The technology for how lock tumblers work is available.
True.
But if... shit, I don't know where I'm going with this. I completely derailed. Sorry.
That a cynic would just, it just works. Why bother? It just works. A skeptic would go, you know what? It's always worked. Never really thought about it. Let's figure out what pieces go into this and what we've seen and figure it from there. Or, better yet, to the Googles.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's good to be able to have that information. Mm-hmm. And that's arguably one of the best parts about living now. We have access to, as has been said on many an occasion, who only knows how many times the total knowledge that was stored at the Library at Alexandria, free for the taking, through magical wireless airwaves of information that's just suddenly there, just free for the taking.
A good example, look at the ancient philosophers, the ancient Greeks, the ones who came up with the idea of cynicism and skepticism. And you look at them and the way their contemporaries of their time treated them. Oh, you're a heretic. You're blaspheming against the gods. No, I am saying, you know, what is the proof? What is the evidence? And the only reason why, you know, I'm sorry to say, religion has had its time. It's done. And the reason being, why are there so many skeptics and atheists in the world today? Because of information. Because information is so widespread and so easily available that we don't have to go, oh, well, I don't understand it. Must be God's doing.
No, we can look it all over now, and we can examine it. And even if we don't like the answer, we can keep asking the questions and pose it out to who only knows how many thousands, if not millions of people out there now.
And I think that's why we're seeing basically religious flare-ups. Like in the States, we're seeing the fundamentalists like going into overdrive.
Because religion has lost its stranglehold.
Well, the trouble is it's losing its grip. I wouldn't say it's lost its stranglehold entirely, because if it did, we wouldn't be having this conversation right now. But then you look over in the Middle East, the Islamic-controlled countries. They are actively blocking the streams of knowledge going into those countries because they themselves know exactly what will happen. they will lose that power. They will lose their wealth, because I'm pretty sure that most of the ones in power, the clerics, the imams, and stuff like that, are living a pretty damn good life, while everyone else is in abject poverty and with that kind of control. But if those people start getting educated, start learning, start understanding that there is something more out there, and the fact that this the greatest book ever written, the immaculate poetry, go check out Paul from Quranify Me. He says it a hell of a lot better than I do. As soon as they find out just exactly what is in there and what the hell is going on, it's going to be a revolution.
And for those of you who want to be the xenophobes and say, oh, well, you know, Middle East, that can never happen to our kind of people. And then,
yeah, you know, now you're being cynical.
May I introduce you to the Dark Ages of Europe?
Yep, there you go. And as far as to the idea that it couldn't happen to us here, meaning the United States, it has. It absolutely has, and maybe not necessarily in our lifetime, but it has. You only have to go back to the mid-1950s when McCarthyism and the Big Red Scare was going on, and the national motto for the United States of America had been, and I forgot when it was first instituted, had been the Latin expression "E pluribus unum," from many, one, which was an explanation of how the 13 colonies became the United States of America, and eventually the 48 states, and now the 50. The idea being that all of these individual groups would band together to be one collective. Even though we were all separate groups, separate entities, the philosophy was all of the peoples, no matter their origin or their affiliations, all working towards one goal, the betterment of the collective. Go ahead.
I can throw a factoid out at you, because sure. I can do that. I went up looking for E pluribus unum, and how it came about, or not necessarily how it came about, but it was adopted by an act of Congress in 1782, according to Wikipedia. However, it was never codified by law, and it was considered a de facto motto of the United States until 1956, when the Congress passed an act, the H.J. Resolution 396, adopting "In God We Trust" as the official motto. Now, you might...
Ooh.
Yes. Yeah. Now, hang on to this one, guys, because 1956, the whole... that wonderful trope that we know of, the Christian nation, and the hold "In God We Trust," point them to that year. 1956 is when it came about.
And there's a reason for that.
The Red Scare.
Exactly. Everybody looked at the communists as immoral, godless, faithless atheists. And there were no more atheists in, you know, any communist country than there are in the U.S. right now. Yeah.
But it was Stalin at the time, if I remember right, wasn't it?
56?
I'm pretty sure it was.
This is interesting, though. The model was actually suggested in 1776 by Pierre-Eugène de Schlegelhoffen. Sorry, I can't get this one.
That's a long-running joke, folks. We'll explain it someday.
Yeah, but it was close. It was actually suggested in 1776 to the committee responsible for developing the seal, like the official seal of the United States of America. So the 1776, the year of the founding, if I remember my history correctly.
Correct.
So E pluribus unum was there at the beginning. So, yeah, like it's awesome. And then 1956 rolls around. It's the Red Scare. And really, could we say that that's where everything pinpoints, like where it all starts? Yeah. Maybe, maybe not.
This whole idea of America's a Christian country. We're going to defend our heritage. was a country who welcomed all religions, all faiths, all ideas, all peoples.
Yeah. And the founders were the ones who actually said, look, we came out from a country that had a state religion that coddled to the religion, that wanted it to be that way. Mm-hmm. And we don't want that. We don't want to be in the business of telling people what they should believe, how they should believe, how they should act. We fought, we spilled blood in order to make sure that that wasn't the case anymore. I mean, shit, we drive on the right-hand side of the road, where in England it's on the left, to exactly spite England. Hmm. Shit, we have road races that go counterclockwise, where in England it's clockwise. Is spite, for crying out loud.
Though I have to say, they've got the roundabout where we've got the four-way stop sign, and unfortunately they got us on that one.
You know,
well, that's been changing though.
Actually, we have a couple of roundabouts here in Calgary that I've actually enjoyed. It does keep traffic moving. Just you gotta hit your right turn off.
Yeah, this is true.
Yeah,
don't be a bicyclist in the roundabout, because you're just asking for pain.
Well, you see, ours, they've actually put a sidewalk on the inside so that you can actually not get hurt.
What the hell is the point of a sidewalk on the inside of a roundabout?
So I don't know. I am not a civil engineer. You know, the thing is, I could go find out. You know, I could be skeptical as to why it's there, and probably get answers for it.
Possibly so, but this is exactly what skepticism is all about. Believe it or not, it really, really is. This is a true case in point. I had always been under the assumption, that the motto "E pluribus unum" was actually codified and official somewhere in the documentation for my country. I grew up always knowing that that was the case. And then In God We Trust became afterwards, and they just switched it. Mm-hmm. And just now, just in the last 5 minutes, I've been told, you know what? It was never codified. And In God We Trust is actually technically the first actual codified national motto for my country. And I'm 45 friggin' years old, man. I always took it for granted. I'd never thought about it.
And it was not Stalin, because Stalin died in 1953. It was not Melnikov who followed him. It was Khrushchev.
Khrushchev, wow.
He took power in 1955.
Hmm.
So it was basically everything leading up to that point, which would have been the end of World War II and the animosity that was happening because of divvying up Germany.
And you know,
really started it.
So someone had once pointed out to me that, you know, Russia has always had this habit of going bald leader, very haired leader, bald leader, very haired leader. And unfortunately, that's not the case. Damn it, Malenkov.
Okay. Hmm. I don't know where to go with that one.
Well, you know, it usually go, you know, it went Lenin, Stalin, then a lot of people said then it was Khrushchev, then Brezhnev.
Andropov.
Yep. And then
Gorbachev.
Chernenko.
Oh, Chernenko, that's right, too. He didn't last very long, though.
Yeah, that's the thing. Him and the guy who followed Stalin, Malenkov, they only lasted about a year.
Yeah. Well, Chernenko was a health issue. Before him, Andropov was a health issue. Brezhnev, I was amazed he'd actually lasted as long as he had. And then Gorbachev, well, he retired because of, well, all the shit he went through. And then Yeltsin, who, again, had hair. And now you've got Putin.
course, Gorbachev had the...
Yeah, the tattoo.
Well, no,
or the birthmark. That...
But he also had the common sense to end the USSR.
Yeah.
There's that.
Although it almost sounds like Putin wants to try to put it back together, but...
But that's a piece for another time.
Yeah.
Yes.
One of the things that we... Talking through this, one of the things that I think that we should probably talk about in the near future is history. Not a history lesson, but why history is as important a subject as it is, and...
And why is it her story?
There kind of is.
I had to speak out for them.
That's nothing wrong with that. But I don't know about anybody else, but when I was growing up, history was boring. It was just boring. And years later, doing my newscasts for history, I grew anew a far greater appreciation for all the pieces that I never got. And I think it might not be such a bad idea to kind of talk about why that is as important as it actually is, and far more than we've ever given it credit for.
I hated math for the same reasons that every kid hated math in high school. I loved my sciences. I did. I loved physics. I loved chemistry. But my absolute favorite, then and to this day, will always be history. Because there's nothing more interesting than watching us fuck up time and time again, because we completely blow off the most important lesson. Those who do not remember the past are doomed to repeat it.
See, right up until you said that, you were on a perfect cynic track right there. It's like, I love watching people fuck it up all over. Face it up all over again.
Well, it's true, because...
It is. But it's a cynical truth. It's... Yeah.
Well, that's cynicism for you.
Yeah, it is.
People have messed up time and time again because, you know, they think it's going to be different for them. And it's not. Go figure. That's cynicism.
And what they're doing is actually insanity.
Well, yeah.
It could be that.
We could go there.
Hmm. Yeah. And the quote that you had, I know I've covered it on a couple of occasions too, by the way. And I want to make sure that I get it correct, because there's a thing about that.
Him or me?
Okay. The gentleman who had the quote originally was George Satayana. And it's been said on many occasions, it's been pointed out on many occasions that Satayana's name comes up in the Billy Joel song, "We Didn't Start the Fire," which is true. The quote... I'm trying to find where it is. Damn it, I know where it is. Satayana plaque, Auschwitz. Because it is on the plaque at Auschwitz. There it is. The original, or the quote at Auschwitz. The quote at Auschwitz on the plaque. "The one who does not remember history is bound to live through it again." And unfortunately, it has proven itself on time and time again to be all too true an expression. And sadly, it is a very poor expression of the human condition. Ignorance is something that cannot be coddled for exactly that reason. There's an entire website dedicated to the expression, "What's the harm?" What's the harm in not remembering? You forget your humanity and what makes it important.
It also goes to, you know, why we're here right now. It's what's the harm in faith? What's the harm in believing in the invisible magic Sky Daddy? We're seeing that harm. We see examples of what the harm is daily. The three of us have a mutual friend who is risking her life on a daily basis to help young mothers and young potential families cope with the fact that there might be a baby on the way, or the very bitter truth that they can't support that baby and are making that ultimate decision. And she is putting herself on that line every single day so that the protesters who are screaming at the top of their lungs about God and death and hell and blood do not scare these people away. Do not deprive them of their basic human rights. That's the harm. The fact that I had a coworker whose daughter attended a Catholic school because at the time it was the better choice for educational quality. Now, I'm talking about the basics. You're reading, writing, arithmetic. Like, they had the resources. They had the money for the textbooks. They had the teachers that were better trained. However, one day, his daughter comes home and says, oh, we learned about this today. And the father, my coworker, asked, well, what about this? Oh, no, we can't talk about that. It's forbidden. A basic scientific question is now forbidden? That is the harm.
I know I'm probably going to regret interrupting you, but what was the topic? Or do you remember?
I can't remember off the top of my head, but I believe it was something scientific or something more or less secular. But she just came home one day and said, yeah, we can't talk about that in the home. It's forbidden. And she was like 7 or 8 years old. And I remember looking at him. I said, dude, it's time to pull her out of that school and get her into the public system. Because right there at 8 years old, you're starting to see the slow turn into, well, indoctrination, for lack of a better term. It's what is the harm? When you purposely stunt someone's ability to learn, when you withhold knowledge for no good reason other than to say, other than God, that is the harm. And that's when I get sort of the righteous fury going here. It's the fundamentalism, and that's why I got into this game in the first place.
Progress is the answer, folks. And when we stop having progress, that's when we start needing to change things.
Mm-hmm.
I agree.
Yeah. You know, you were asking earlier about when I mentioned everything in the Middle East, you know, theocracy, and saying, you know, it's never going to happen here. I got three words for that. Saiten Brugenkate and his reason debate with Matt Dillahunty, where he said, what's the best form of government for America? A Christian theocracy.
And to him, I have three numbers. 357.
Well,
because another great thing about the American people, that Second Amendment makes sure that when our government does something that we don't like, we remind them just how they got into power.
Yeah, unfortunately, not too many people recognize that other part of the Second Amendment rather than just, I want my gun.
And here's the funny part. I said at the top of the show that I was going to basically have a doozy for next week. That is what I want to talk about next week.
Yay!
And I did not want to drop that on us right before the show, half an hour before the show. This is a topic that we're going to cover next week, and I wanted to make sure that we knew ahead of time because there's a lot to unpack with this. I want to talk about this one gets a little bit hard because I want to talk about the gun culture in the U.S., but it's not exactly that. I want to try to unpack the Second Amendment.
yet again, I get to play the role of the odd man out, because show of hands, who here owns guns?
Good point.
Oh, wait, you got a gun?
No, I don't.
I do.
Oh, you do, huh?
Yes, I do.
Oh, I didn't know that.
I do. I have my grandfather's bolt-action shotgun.
Ooh, the nice one.
Way to, well, you say that now.
The only way,
I do not know. I have not taken it out in a long time, but it is here in the office. The only way that you can release the bolt after you've shot it, last I heard from my brother, and I've had this thing for a long time, is you need a set of vice grips and a lot of strength.
Hmm.
It's just not in great shape.
I know the feeling because I have... I ought to probably save this for next week, but I'll just get it out of the way now. My sister's boyfriend at the time, a couple years back, my stepdad had come to the resolution, I want to get him a, you know, little 22 rifle for Christmas. He had the family rifle, the one that he'd had and his father had before him. Just, you know, the varmint rifle. Because, you know, farmers. I had a newer one, and he offered to trade me my newer one for the family one, so that he could keep that one in the family and give my newer one to the boyfriend at the time, who, of course, is not her boyfriend now, complete douchebag. Unfortunately, the one that I had was working great. The one that my stepdad gave me hasn't worked since, let's see. I want to say Reagan.
Wow.
And finding parts for that thing?
Not so much.
Look at the bright side. With the advent of 3D printing.
See, that is exactly why I prefer revolvers and bolt actions. Because the likelihood of those breaking down, very slim. And usually it's something you can fix.
Fair enough. All right. So, yeah, next week we are going to be discussing the Second Amendment to the Constitution of the United States of America. And I'm saying it that way specifically because there has been huge, monstrous debates for 200 years to try to understand what was meant. And I know full well, Dallin, for you, it's you are really, really on the outside on this one. So for you, it's going to be quite interesting to see what your take has been on it so far, and to, you know, see what your position on it tends to be when all is said and done.
Well, the nice thing about being north of the border on this one is that I could definitely take it from a more academic approach.
Absolutely.
You know, get the actual letter of it. I've done a little bit of checkup on it, watched a few things, got really cynical about it for the longest time. Rounding us back here, you want to be a cynic about the Second Amendment and the so-called gun culture in the United States? Go check out Bowling for Columbine by Michael Moore. No, because it will make you cynical about it, especially...
Is this a whole read the Bible because we need more atheists kind of thing?
I would say just look at what he's done. I would say watch the movie and see his examples. I'm definitely not advocating Michael Moore in total, though, because it turns out the guy is a bit of a douche nozzle. But it does talk a bit about the gun culture in America, and... He interviews a couple of militia guys. He goes into a bank where if you open up a new checking account, you get a brand new rifle.
I'm guessing Texas.
You might be surprised. He also talks a bit with guys like Marilyn Manson, the guys who made South Park. Gets in trouble with Charlton Heston. You know,
well, like that's hard.
Yeah, well, no, I'm just saying, though, that there's a fair bit there. But the one thing it did for me is it really filled me with a lot of unsubstantiated rage at the whole thing. And it was one of the things that sort of made me say, just because it is your right does not, to me, that is not reason enough behind certain motivations.
There's that.
Like, if I'm not too familiar on what Canada's rights are in terms of firearms, or in terms of, like, do we have an equivalent to the Second Amendment? I don't know. I will find out, though.
We'll look into that for next week.
Yeah, the fact remains, though, is if I had that right, does that mean that I am suddenly going to go out and drop 10 grand on an arsenal? No, because I don't live in an area where circumstances would dictate that I own an arsenal. So to simply say it, to simply demand it and own it because it's my right, to me does not seem to be enough of a justification. But no. We'll say that for next week.
Two things to say. One, sure. As far as homework for next week goes, might I strongly suggest watching, and you're going to look at me like I'm crazy on this one, watch Penn and Teller's Bullshit, the episode on gun control.
Ah, yes.
And that will help you get into the right mindset for next week. Second thing, as far as amendments go, why are we starting on the second one? Because we've knocked the first one out of the park every single episode we've had this show.
Yeah. Yeah, and we've discussed it, and it's not my intention to go through every piece of minutia for the Bill of Rights for the United States. That's not my intention, because the third, nobody ever fucking thinks about the third, truthfully. Nobody knows what it is, and I think I'm one of the few that's got half a clue. If I remember correctly, the third is that you're not supposed to house troops in personal spaces because you just not.
Look, if you want to talk about the third, we could do an entire episode on the 18th.
Well, there's stuff that we're going to end up talking about because it's good legislation, not because it's American legislation, but because it's good legislation. And that's something that we can end up talking about, because I want to talk about what makes for good legislation. What is good legislation? I want to talk about Reaganomics and trickle-down economy. And like I said, I don't just want to hit the stuff that is specifically a hornet's nest to kick over. I do want to talk about stuff that is more fun, that's more soft, that's more nuanced. And I don't want to end up pissing people off left, right, and center. It's fun to do, don't get me wrong. But at the same time, it's nice to be able to go through the nuances and try to figure out why is. That is the entire reason for having started this whole thing.
Hold on. Cookie for either of you if you can figure out what the 18th Amendment is without looking it up. You already looked it up, didn't you?
No, I'm not even going to until next week.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember. The 18th was...
It was the silly one.
Prohibition?
Yep.
Ah.
So, Tao, if you're watching, got you there. There you go. Anyway, like I said, next week we're going to talk about the Second Amendment to the Constitution of the United States of America. Look it up that way under Wikipedia, not because of the write-up that they've got for it, but because they will give you the entirety of the text, which is not huge, not by a long shot. So it's amazing how few words can cause such an immense disagreement on people for 200 years. Really, it's worth it. Well, as always, everybody, thank you for spending your time with us. We do truly appreciate it many times over. Dallin, of course, as always, thank you, man.
Yeah, pleasure to be here. If I'm going to close off with one piece of advice on this show, going back to skepticism and cynicism, yes, they, especially when it comes to the religious exchanges between theists and atheists, yes, you start off as a skeptic. You are knocking down the arguments based on fact, based on science, based on No, you know what? I'm not going to say truth because then we step into a minefield there.
May I? How about the expression better understanding?
All right.
Because if you start talking about who's truth and, you know, whether or not we're brains in a jar, I'm going to have to smack you.
Yeah, and the Mad Dillahunty will come and hunt me down. Anyways, no, you start off as a skeptic. You're knocking these things down, coming from a position of fact, of knowledge, of better understanding. But eventually, a lot of skeptics do become cynical because they've done this over and over and over again. It's the broken record. It's the same thing Seth Andrews talked about in one of his shows where he was getting tired of constantly dealing with the same crap from a different voice. And you can get very cynical about it and just want to drop it. Be skeptical, folks, and be cynical. But never, ever be silent. If your cynicism is going to make you start mocking the people you're debating against, don't stop. Because that is what a lot of people want. You think about the child that continuously asks the same question over and over and over again until he or she wears the parents down to where they acquiesce. That's what's happening here. The broken record, that is what it does. So even though you've got to dust off and say, okay, punk, here we go again, never be silent. Never stop. Because that is what they want. Because to them, silence means they've won. And you cannot ever let them do that. Okay.
Thank you, Ben. Joe, of course, as always, thank you. Where's my video over here? There you are. That's better. Thank you, of course, very much for your time.
No problem. And if I'm going to offer a bit of advice for the end of this show, it's don't ever try to break into my apartment.
That's always a good choice right there. Because one never knows how many RPGs are trained at that one window, right?
Get off my lawn.
Yeah, the scary thing is, I know where he lives. He doesn't have a lawn. But if he tells you to get off it, I recommend getting off it. I've seen what's in that closet. I'm scared from here.
Not in the closet anymore.
Oh, now, why did you go and tell them that?
Probably because we didn't get in an Amish Wolverine joke yet tonight.
Oh.
You thought I was going to forget.
You know.
I thought I was going to forget.
Actually, someone made a comment to me about how fast I got back up and recovered after my surgery a few weeks back. And someone made a joke about, geez, you seem to be healing awfully fast. And I'm like, yeah, but I don't see any claws yet. Norwegian Wolverine. Now there's something to be scared of.
Well, yeah, he is.
So Sabretooth.
I hope not.
No, let's hope not. Anyway, as I mentioned, we know full well this is not a sexy podcast. This is not like The Scathing Atheist or For Cognitive Dissonance, although my intention is to get the guys from Cognitive Dissonance on sometime so we can discuss what the line is, quote-unquote the line, between sarcasm and mocking and ridicule and where the end is for where you can get anything worthwhile out of people for it. Because they make a habit of finding out where a line is and kicking sand over it while they're trampling across it left, right, and center. I know I use that expression a lot, but, you know, whatever.
The line is maturity, and you learn quickly just where that line is with some folks.
Yeah.
That's true. But if we're going to go ahead and get out of here on lines from people, I've got one that I want to use. And it's from close, warm, personal friend of the show, Mr. Richard Feynman. If it disagrees with experiment, it's wrong. In that simple statement is the key to science. It doesn't make a difference how beautiful your guess is. It doesn't make a difference how smart you are who make the guess or what his name is. If it disagrees with experiment, it is wrong. It was pointed out very, very well by Neil deGrasse Tyson, I believe it was. It doesn't matter what your theology is, what your economic doctrine is, what your language is. 2 plus 2 always equals 4. It is a universal truth of the universe, and it doesn't matter who you are, where you come from, or what year you were born in, what language you profess with, or what your profession is. It is the same everywhere. The laws of the universe are immutable on that.
Or for the more astute of you, there are 4 lights!
And when all is said and done, there are things that people will say isn't. There will be people who will rail against things that we can see. My wife used to say it best. Data doesn't lie. What you make that data say is entirely up to you, though.
And now I've got Brent Spiner in my head. Thanks, you.
You're quite welcome. In her case, believe it or not, she was talking with me about getting data out of a database because we were working in a call center, and she had to report back to her her client, trying to find out what was happening. And she was able to pull out the data that they wanted and give them the information that they wanted in a way that they wanted to make them happy, even though it was technically fudging with the information. Gave them all the right information. But.
Which brings me to a perfect way to wrap up this little thing. Skepticism is this. It's not the data we wanted, but the data we needed. That makes the difference.
That's one way of putting it. I had a similar thing with my old job. They wanted numbers. I gave them numbers. They didn't like what the numbers said. They asked me to go back and get more numbers. I got more numbers. Again, they didn't like what it said. But what the bald truth was is that the numbers were representing the current state of their productivity. And as much as they didn't want to believe it, it sucked. It absolutely sucked to the point where they told me to stop getting the numbers because they didn't want to see it anymore.
Dallin, we won.
I'm just like, whatever. But no, the numbers don't lie because that's what's there.
We forced him over the 2-hour mark. We won.
I still got a minute left on my clock here, so.
Yeah. And what skepticism really comes down to is, what is it? Which is exactly what we're here to do. Why is something the way that it is? What is it and why is it? And I could not be more proud than to be a piece of all of this. To grow myself, to grow however many of you there are who are watching. Thank you. If you do have some other questions or commentary, please, of course, email me, shujintribble@gmail.com, Facebook, shujintribble, Twitter, shujintribble, or, again, you can take advantage of the voicemail line, and we can see what we can do with that. Again, the number there on the screen, 859-HCTV-554. Thank you all for having stuck it out with us. We do appreciate it, and we hope that you found something worthwhile. Grand thanks to Noah and Heath and Lucinda. Many thanks to Cash, the guys at Cognitive Dissonance, Neil deGrasse Tyson, and most many thank yous to all of the people who followed down through history asking why. You are the inspiration. And of course, Frank. Because it were not for you trying to piss me off and tell me you're not using Facebook the way that I am and the way that I'm doing it is the right way, I wouldn't be doing this today. Quite literally. So for all of you, thank you for your time. I wish you all the peace I no longer have. I wish the strength that I've learned. I wish you all well. And to my lovely wife, Matane Fujin, I love you, I miss you, dream of me, and tomorrow, happy birthday. Until the next time we get together, everyone, again, do your homework, because next week is heavy duty. We will see you then. And of course, as always, good night.
You've been listening to Holy Crap, the Vlogcast. Feel free to leave a comment on the show's website at holycrapthevlogcast.com, where you'll also find links to our Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, and Google Plus pages. Theme music provided by Kevin MacLeod at incompetech.com. On behalf of all of us here, thank you for listening.